From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, The Devil. Happy birthday, by the way, to Los Angeles musician Mike Mangan from your fiance, Holly. There you go, Michael. Hope you have a great one. Here's what's happening. One police officer killed, six other law enforcement officers wounded in South Carolina after officials reported an active shooter situation in Florence there. Three Florence County Sheriff's deputies and three other Florence police officers who were shot, all receiving medical attention, a suspect in custody after that situation. A man has been arrested in Logan, Utah, in an investigation into envelopes filled with ricin, a poison that was mailed to Pentagon officials and President Donald Trump. A hacking group linked to the North Korean regime is accused of stealing hundreds of millions of dollars by infiltrating the computer systems of banks in at least 11 countries since 2014. That's how most of the North Korean government makes its money, hacking. Hacked Facebook users could be owed as much as $7,800 apiece, that's you, in compensation as a result of the security breach revealed last week. Legal experts say that the damages could run into the thousands for anyone affected by the hack if you can prove you felt distressed. Last Friday, Facebook revealed that hackers gain access to 50 million accounts. Now, for most of you, if you have a cell phone, it probably buzzed and beeped loudly Wednesday afternoon around 2:18 Eastern Time. The presidential alert on the screen, this is a test of the National Wireless Emergency Alert System. No action is needed. It was the first nationwide test of the system built by the federal government and cell phone carriers to warn all of us of an emergency like a terror attack or a widespread disaster. Now, it didn't go off for everybody. Lauren Weinstein's with us. Lauren, why didn't it happen for everyone? I don't even think you got one, did you?
No, I didn't. And by the way, regarding that Facebook story, I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for that money.
No, that check at $7,800 is not huge.
No, I didn't. I had two phones ready to go for the test, and neither of them went off. And I got a lot of people sending me email today, telling me whether they did or they didn't.
Yeah, mine did. Mine did.
Yeah, it looks like it was very, very spotty. I couldn't see a pattern. There would be people in the same room on the same carrier. Some would get it, some wouldn't. Some would get it if they were directly on a cell or if they were on Wi-Fi calling. It might work. It might not. It just seemed to be very random. Now, of course, this is the reason we do tests, right? I mean, you're trying
get to the bugs out.
Work the bugs out of the system. One possibility I've heard is, obviously if the phones are too old, they're not going to know about this new messaging system. But even if your phone is particularly new, it might not have firmware that was actually tested for this system. So There's a lot of work left to be done with that. Now, we're both old enough to remember how this used to be handled, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they'd run an air raid siren test every other month or something. Then we had the emergency broadcast system.
That's right. We still do. We still have that.
Well, now it's the emergency alert system.
The alert system.
So technically what they did today was the first nationwide test of what's called IPAWS, the Integrated Public Alert and Warning System. The federal government is great at acronyms. So that was a combination of the emergency alert system and the wireless emergency alert system.
Good idea, but if there's ever a false alarm, there's going to be panic all over the place.
Well, like what happened with
Hawaii.
Right, exactly. So they really got to be careful of this. If there's any problems with it, especially if you're doing nationwide alerting, if you mess up, if you do a false alarm or someone's screwing around with it, people will lose their confidence in it, and it can take you years to get it back.
You got that right. Lauren, thanks. But my phone went off today. I saw that and said, well, it's probably pretty novel, but gosh, I hope we don't get false alarms. What a disaster. It may not be so hard to believe that during this murky political landscape, but a new study finds that the divide between Democrats, Republicans is the worst it's ever been, more so than many people even think. The research conducted by Zachary Neal, an associate professor of psychology and global urban studies at Michigan State, is among the first to measure polarization not only by examining the frequency of parties working together, but also by demonstrating how they've grown more distant than any other time in modern history. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. John, do you feel this way too, that people are growing apart?
Well, I mean, there's an ongoing war right now. I don't think I've seen Washington this kind of a feverish pitch right now, where they're at each other's throats, and you know, the over this Kavanaugh hearing and that testimony last week that was so crazy. But yes, I do think that the two-party system is beginning to fail, and partly because, you know, if you got two parties, you know, running government, and the two parties are at loggerheads with each other, and there's no compromise, and the so-called moderates within the parties really are more marginalized today, if not non-existent, I think you've got a real problem in terms of governing this great experiment that we all love called the United States of America. It's very tough, you know, when you've got competing views. I mean, just take the Kavanaugh situation just for a second. You have, why is it that 100% of Democrats believe Christine Blasey Ford, and nearly all Republicans believe Kavanaugh? Now, with respect to, you know, Ford's allegation that was 36 years old when she was 15 years of age, they can't cite any corroborating witnesses that were there. Why do they all believe it? I mean, unless there's got to be some kind of compelling reason. The only compelling reason is because they want to defeat him because they don't like what he stands for politically. So if that's what it's all come down to, and I think there's a lot of folks that are beginning to believe that's really what this is all about, it really has nothing to do with Christine Blasey Ford. It has nothing to do with the factual basis of what occurred 36 years ago. It only has to do with finding any way possible to defeat this guy's nomination by dragging him through the mud and hopefully peel off a few votes because, you know, the Senate is so divided.
Well, like you said, though, this entire, not only the Senate, but the people are divided as well. John, thank you. John's website, onlinecolumnist.com. And with the Brett Kavanaugh update, the FBI has apparently finished its probe, its investigation. Apparently, they did not interview Brett Kavanaugh or Christine Ford. Christine Ford's people are really upset about that. And the report is supposed to be delivered tonight. It probably already has. The Senate will read it confidentially tomorrow. And then they're expecting a vote very, very soon over the next several days on his confirmation. We shall see what happens. Federal Reserve Chairperson Jerome Powell sees the U.S. economy generating highly optimistic expectations with the unusual combination of low employment and inflation fueling hopes for an extended expansion. In spite of that, is everyone doing well? Let's check in with Andre Eglishon, talk show host and author of Thieves in the Temple. What do you think, Andre? Is everybody doing super?
Well, George, first of all, thanks for having me. I mean, you know, no. And Dan, and to answer the question very shortly, no. I mean, the economic recovery has been very uneven. Nonetheless, you know, we don't really know what the numbers are for this year. I mean, for last fiscal year, which ends on September 30th. You know, we don't know how much the United States, you know, spent more than what we took in, but all you got to do is do a little bit of arithmetic. You can see at the end of the previous fiscal year, back in September of 2017, we had $20.25 trillion in debt. Well, as of last week, it was 21.5. So we're looking at about a $1.2 trillion increase in our national debt in 1 year. Now, why is that happening? And why should we be concerned about it? Number one, if the interest rates go up, the borrowing costs of taking on that kind of debt burden by the United States is going to be mind-boggling.
Sure.
Number two, you know, it's not, you know, too difficult to see that we had a $1.5 trillion tax cut, and in the same fiscal year, we now have a $1.2 trillion shortfall in our national debt. So, you know, the tax cut, you know, has not really fully yet made it into the economy. It's only a theory, you know, that if we give millionaires and billionaire individuals a huge tax cut, that how much is that going to filter back into the economy in terms of creating jobs, and what will the velocity of that money coming back into the economy due for both the medium and short and long term. We need to really look at this. I mean, this was unprecedented, but nonetheless, we'll see what happens. I just hope, you know, that the Fed gets this one right, because, you know, when the interest rates start going up, like I said, mm-hmm. the cost of all this borrowing is going to be astronomical in terms of debt onto our heirs.
And it affects credit cards, housing, and everything else. Andre, thank you. Regularly eating foods like bacon and sausages may raise the risk of breast cancer, according to researchers. A review of studies found women who ate high levels of processed meat, remember what Doc Wallach says about all this, had a 9% increased risk of cancer compared with those who ate little of it. In a moment, we're going to look at world events through the eyes of Nostradamus. Well, sort of. John Hogue next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. You know, so many things are happening worldwide. I thought we'd get a better perspective through the eyes of John Hogue, our prophecy expert. He writes on the subjects of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism, prophecy. He is definitely considered a world authority on Nostradamus and a best-selling author. His work has brought him international acclaim. He's been published in at least 18 languages, has appeared in hundreds of radio and television shows all over the planet. A couple of his books include Predictions 2015-16 and also 10 Predictions 2018, plus the U.S. midterm election forecast that he has. Welcome, John. If I had drums here, John, I'd be beating them for you. Welcome to the program.
Bum, bum, dee, bum, bum, bum.
Oh, it's that old opera singer in you again, huh?
Yes, the deep voice.
How have you been?
Well, I've been really busy. I've been so busy that I kind of dropped out for about my last Hogue Bulletins came the 11th of August, and just today I unloaded a 40,000-word, 13-article wave I called the tsunami to catch up on everything. There's just so much going on. Also, I was traveling. I was traveling into the deep red state of Arkansas.
Uh-huh.
To do the Arklantis convention. And also on the way, I met a lot of really beautiful people from Arkansas. And it always strikes me as somebody who is a free wing, neither blue or red in my tribal political identity that seems to be polarizing the country, as your report said, worse than ever before. But when I actually go out of my blue range into the red range of Americans, I meet really decent, beautiful people, and I listen to them, and I can see so much potential if people would just stop listening to this ratings, these rating whores of mainstream news, and just would talk to each other.
They don't talk anymore, John. That's the problem. Nobody talks. They scream. They argue.
But I've actually found the people in the red states more willing to talk than I do the people around me who call themselves progressive. And I live in the deep blue western Washington part of Washington state. And it's intriguing to me because of the thing that I did back in January of this year. I put together this forecast, which is the main essay at the end of 10 Predictions 2018 that you just mentioned. And I was just reading it again after many months. And I can't really say that I would change anything that I put in it, that what basically is happening is a level of, if you're going to define it in planets, there's two major planets in astrology, in political astrology, that are at play right now. One is Uranus, and just recently come into Taurus. And then there's also newly into its home sign of Capricorn is Saturn. Mm-hmm. Long story short, it's a struggle. Uranus finds itself in a Taurian sign, which means it's dealing more with focusing on personal needs and desires and expectations. Whereas the earthy sign of Capricorn, Saturn is the arbiter of the establishment, of the bigger powers, bigger than the individual. And so you have, long story short, it favors the establishment more than it favors those who are resisting the establishment. Because Uranus in Taurus is in its fall. And it's, in layman's terms, that means this ruler of Aquarius is in the least comfortable sign that it's transiting through. Now, last time it did that was back in the early 30s. And when it did that coming into Taurus, it did two major changes in political astrology. It brought the German Third Reich into being under Adolf Hitler. And it also aided Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal to destabilize established banking ideas and things that were restructured that, in the positive sense, created this longest profitable wealth period of the in history that happened because of the reforms of the banks. Those reforms have slowly been chipped apart by Reagan and Clinton in his two terms and Bush, and now we're almost back to where we were. Almost the same kind of demographics of the separation between the few wealthy and the majority who have not so much wealth is almost exactly where it was in 1928, just before the crash. And so we are repeating a cycle. And so the issue is that Uranus, if ever I saw something that expresses itself in Uranus in its fall, the revolutionary, the innovator, the person with original thinking, it's affecting what's called the resistance to the curtain situation in the White House. And it is expressing itself with great passion and unpredictability, but it's negative. It's about destroying Trump, getting the House back, getting the Senate back, but for what? It's not really defined itself. Is what we know what the resistance is against. And I hear it all every day here because I live in the very heart of it.
Sure.
I always keep asking them, I understand your problem there, but what are you for? And if you follow this pattern with much more energy to it than it happened before, because I remember this happened in 1996 when I was telling people who couldn't believe me after 1994 and the Republicans won the House and Senate back. I said, no, Clinton is going to be reelected in 96. I was on a show in Portland. 500,000 Oregonians watched it, and the man literally had a meltdown, said, you're absolutely crazy. That can't happen. And of course, 4 years later, I said, well, no, it'll happen because if anybody but Bill Clinton, you're fundamentally you don't have anything to replace him except you want to tear him down. And then what? And it won't work. It didn't. I see it 10 times worse now than it was before.
At least that.
At least. And the people of this country are being so terribly played by the corporate-owned media news that it is really quite, and this classic Uranus confusion in its fall in Taurus, you know, where you should be grounded, you're just, your emotions, your attitudes are just a lot of mud, earth sign. It's a muddy place, a swampy, muddy place. And unfortunately, it plays similarly to the chaos that was happening in Germany. It plays to some kind of savior that's going to come and save you from yourselves. And, you know, I have been, oh, God, long, long time, first with Art and then with you, George, I've been talking for 25 years now about how the danger of fascism rising again in the world and America being one of the leading places for it is really at hand now. It's not going to be, when I look at the situation on the 6th of November, it's most interesting. We have a unique thing happening where Uranus is going retrograde. It's back, going backwards in the sky, which means that it's a time to recollect where you've been and go in and kind of resolve what is the mechanics of what you're doing on the outside world, especially if it isn't working. And Uranus is leaving Taurus around just shy of 11 o'clock Pacific Standard Time on Election Day and starts backtracking into Aries. Now, what that means is that if red voters, red American voters, go to the polls early, especially in a lot of the areas which will be in early time zones.
Hold on for a second, John. Already at the break, we'll come back and we'll talk more about this. We'll get into some of his top 10 forecasts for this year, see how close he's coming. And also March 23rd, if you live in Everett, Washington, just circle that date for 2019. We'll tell you about that later, too. Hey, a couple little notes for you. First of all, our annual Ghost to Ghost show will be Wednesday night, Halloween night, October 31st. Get ready for that. And as we always do, tradition here, in addition to your phone calls, we'd love to get some of your email stories in, because then Tom will call you back and you just might get on the program. So I'm going to give you an email address to send your name, phone number, and your ghost story, and we'll try to get back to you. Halloween story at coasttocoastam.com. It's that simple. Halloween story at coasttocoastam.com. John Hogue with us as we talk about prophecy, predictions. John, we've got to get into your 2018 predictions. How many have come true already?
Well, there have been a number. The most shocking have been my eighth prophecy. What I did is it's basically short chapters that takes a theme and then looks at it fully. And
want to give us some headlines of the 10 real quick?
Well, yes. They were the definition of the year being the year of acceleration. Definitely things have intensified that way. The second prophecy was Uranus and the Last Chance sextile that looked at a play between Uranus and Jupiter that made it possible for actually the government to come together and have more common ground. But that petered out by May.
Mm.
And that seemed to happen in a way.
Quickly.
There was also the third prophecy, will Trump be impeached? Not in 2018, and that looks like that's definitely happening. I've always said that both candidates in 2016 were afflicted astrologically. Both had the danger of not, if they did not survive their first 2 years in the first term, they may not survive the term in office. That means leave office. Nothing of a physical or violent nature I see in this, but that they could leave in scandal or something like that. So, you know, we're entering a point now where the president will be 2 years in office at the end of January. So it will really be very interesting to see what happens in this midterm. Like I was saying before, that the first half of the day goes to the red states and the red voters. If they get out early, they vote early. Indeed, it's really going to probably be decided in a week or two while people are doing their absentee ballots. But there is a possibility for a surprise to happen in the West. The delegates, the legislators that will be battling for dominance in the House of Representatives will see a surge towards the blue in the afternoon. So it'll be interesting to see those battle states in the West that might see an 11th hour or close to the polls turnaround. So with that, you know, if before I go to the fourth prophecy, I would simply say about President Trump that if he survives this these 2 years, he will, I still see, has a potential to be a two-term president. What's so hard for the polarized people in my family of readers, it's like I have this family, they're all arguing at the table with each other, and I'm just quietly watching this and trying
taking notes.
Yeah, taking notes. And it's like, I mean, literally, some of my family members and other things are getting quite involved and passionate about it, and I'm going, well, everybody who watches their own tribal news, and this is classic Uranus and its fall in Taurus, they're just watching the news and they're assuming that the other side is hearing all this and this is going to change their mind. The truth is both sides have tuned out each other. The red side watches Fox. The blue side watches MSNBC and CNN. And the twain shall never meet. So this The other thing, too, that I look very carefully in it is that so many of the Democrats who once felt white working-class Democrats that really went and voted for Trump because they've been neglected for a few presidential cycles, I do not see a change in their opinion. They're going to hold with Trump until his sixth year if he's a two-term president, according to my interpretation of the astrology. They're going to give him a chance. And when I talk to them in the red states, I see it's very clear that they're not going to budge. Also, the other thing that, once again, the Democrats are overlooking is the power of the evangelical vote. I said
it's 10 very months strong, before, very well, strong.
Yeah, I said 10 months before Trump was elected, I said the big upset could happen through there. And so it's my sense is that there will – I don't really honestly see a lot of budging, a lot of moving. It's almost like it's the musical chairs that we've had before where it's the same numbers. Even if the Senate goes to the Democrats, it's the same number of seats just switching back and forth. And in that, there's not enough to create any significant legislative advance. So it's just more, and my sense is the next 2 years are going to be even more dysfunctional than anything we've seen before.
And it's almost unbearable now.
Well, it's I hate to say it to everybody across the United States, coast to coast, but we're entering a period. We're not at the end of this. This crisis that's going, this evolutionary challenge that's happening to the United States and the world is just going to get more intense. And we're not at the point yet where people are ready to break out of their tribal identities and actually think of a way to get out of this emergency. It's going to have to get much worse. And frankly, astrology is saying that you're not going to see a tide shift until the middle of the next decade. We're just entering the worst part, but we're not even to the other side of this travail yet. We're not even close. It's going to get much worse. And what's going to happen, which kind of brings me to the issue of Kavanaugh and all the fighting about that, is that I've said very clearly back in August 11th in my articles then that Kavanaugh would be picked, that I think people are established in that, and I think the thing that most people on the left are afraid of is really not the thing they should be looking at according to their needs. If you look at Kavanaugh and the stars and what he's done in his record, I don't think Roe v. Wade has any danger or any of the social issues are going to be upset by this Supreme Court.
No, I don't think so at all.
But I tell you, this time with the Uranus and Saturn, the defining planets of next year and into 2020, these planets, the way they're positioning, the way they're going to move in and out of harmonious effects, and that means harmonious to major corporate establishment will to power, that you're going to see with a man like Kavanaugh, he will vote 100% in favor of the corporations. And you're going to see this creeping coup d'etat of corporate hegemony, which started with Citizens United in January of 2010. This will be resolved, crystallized by sometime in 2020 when Saturn is about to leave Capricorn, its Earth sign, and go into the sign that the last time it was in Aquarius, those were the great massive and sometimes violent citizen mass revolutions like the French Revolution. That's the last time it happened. And so it's possible that after 2020, the American people or the working people, people start to get riled about the situation. There will be basically in a completely corporately controlled United States. And so that's my call. I hope I'm wrong. I wish I was more wrong than I.
You recently were on the History Channel, a show called The Last Pope, and the Catholic Church, of course, has been under fire for all kinds of atrocities lately.
It was a unique experience, and it's put me in a position, that show, to have to kind of talk about something that happened that's for my own sake of credibility, I'm sorry I even have to say it, but this show took...
You're talking about The Last Pope, that show.
Okay. Yeah, the show basically circled in the second hour around the idea that Cardinal Ratzinger, who later became Benedict the 16th, that under orders from John Paul II, presented the third secret of the prophecy of Fatima, which is one of the most significant prophecies in Catholic prophecy. Just briefly, it happened, three children were visited by the Virgin Mary mm-hmm. on the 13th of May through October, just on the 13th day of each of those months. The final time, there were 50,000 people there in a driving rainstorm who saw the sun appear and dry their clothes, and kind of a mass miracle happened. It had three secrets. Of the three children, only the eldest, Lucia dos Santos, could hear the apparition of Mary. The first secret was they were shown the hell and all its horrors. The second is about the consecration of Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary and the Mother of God, and the fact that the World War would end and people would be coming home, but her two younger friends were going to die in 1918. They did die.
And they did die, young, very young. They were kids.
Yeah. So Lucia was the only one left. She became a nun. She learned how to write. And then she, in the latter half of the 1930s, when there were amazing aurora borealises, ironically enough, the same phenomena that she was seeing that made her augment the third secret, were also seen by Adolf Hitler a few weeks before he started World War II with these huge red aurora borealises. It's quite a story of how he was deciding to make this non-aggression pact with Russia. And it kind of set his course, and of course it set the course for World War II and another part of Europe and Portugal. Sister Lucia is looking at the same lights, and she was convinced by her bishop to write down the third secret, put it in a letter and seal it. And she said, it must be open and revealed to the world no later than 1960. She was adamant about that.
I remember that.
We also know that it was two pages of writing. We also know that it was, that she was convinced to say a few of the opening lines to the secret. So we know how it starts. Now, 60 came and went. Nothing happened, except a few years later, we almost blew the world up in the Cuban Missile Crisis. It's a fact that John the 23rd, who was Pope at that time, one of the first things he did when in the late 50s when he became Pope was to have the letter unsealed, and he read it, and then he had it resealed and put away. I've shown in some of my books that he had in his comments about world dangers and all, it almost sounded like he was alluding somewhat to what he saw in that third secret. It's a fact that not very well known that as Khrushchev and Kennedy were trying to find a way out of the terrible thing they had set in motion, the Cuban Missile Crisis, there was another channel, John the 23rd, who was personal friend of Khrushchev's brother. And through Khrushchev's brother, the Pope was making a very strong negotiation attempt to also wind down the terrors that were about to happen. There are indications that this secret was about the Cuban Missile Crisis and about an apocalyptic war.
Well, we came close.
Well, and then that's so, you know, why would Sister Lucia be so adamant that it has to be no later than 1960? Well, that obviously means that something's about to happen shortly after that.
Mm-hmm.
So it remains sealed. It remains sealed until 2000, what, 40 years later. It's released by Cardinal Ratzinger, who is the head of the Doctrine of the Faith, which in older times was the Grand Inquisitor. And he reveals this letter. And on the show, I read the letter. I read the prophecy. I pointed out in pithy, quick ways, which two of my points, if anybody's seen the show, two of my very passionate points were stated. I mean, basically, long story short, the prophecy that they released on that time was about the Pope, his bishops, and the multitude of lay Catholics wandering out of the flaming, darkened ruins of Rome, up a hill where a huge cross was. And when they reached that point of the cross, soldiers mowed down the Pope and the bishops and some of the lay people with bullets.
Now, you think that was the third secret?
No. As far as I'm concerned, and for certain reasons.
Some people do.
And here are the two things that you will see me say on the show. But they're two of six things I said rapidly in succession that should have been in the show. What happened is I say, first off, John Paul is shot by one man. He survives it, and it's in a flat square of the Vatican, not on a hill, not with a cross. There's really no association to that. No one else was harmed. No bishops were shot down. It's just one man, Aliaga. And so for those two points, leaves it open to why is this being applied? And then I said, and this part was cut out of it, I then talk about how the letter that Ratzinger presented was three pages, not two. The opening statements that were well known by prophecy watchers were not in it. And there's also some doubt that the graphologists that are looking at it think that perhaps it wasn't in her handwriting. In short, I said, this third secret, whatever it is, released in the 2000, is a fraud.
A fraud?
It's a fraud. Jeez. It's a lie. It's not the third secret.
It was done to deceive us or to mislead us?
Well, you know, I put this all out in the show, and I certainly understand if the show... I guess the way it should have played is they should have not taken me just saying those two statements, because what they did is it makes it look like I'm saying, oh, it's not about John Paul II, which is true. That's what I said. But then they jump over that and make the association that it's about the martyrdom of Francis, the current pope. And I'm kind of there looking like I'm supporting it. Even though my points were taken out of context. So I'm in this situation as a prophecy scholar. This is the first time this happened in 34 years. I guess I'm lucky that it's been this long. But, I have to do something I hate to do with production companies, but I have to do it for the record.
Hold on, John. We're at the top of the hour. We'll talk more about this when we come back on Coast to Coast AM.